You're listening to the Corporate Expat Experience. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Corporate Expat Experience. I am so excited to introduce my next guest to you. We met just recently and had an amazing conversation that I had to share with you because I learned so much. So I want to welcome Raymond Harari. He is founder and managing director of the Canalis Capital. Raymond, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Nicole. I'm so excited to be part of the podcast.
We are excited to have you here. I know my guests are going to learn so much from you. I walked away from our conversation the other day with so many great insights, and you gave me so much to think about. So I'm excited to get into this. Ray, tell us a bit about you.
Sure. So I was born and raised in Panama City. I am part of a big family business of which I am in the fourth generation. The core businesses of the family are retail and wholesale, and we work with large brands like Nike, Zara, and a few others. And we also do financial services, real estate, and energy. I grew up very much involved in the business since I was very young. For as long as I can remember, I would go every summer and Christmas holiday to the stores to sell shoes and apparel to the clients, which was a great learning experience growing up and developed a lot of my work ethic. After I graduated from high school, I went to the University of Pennsylvania, studied systems engineering with a minor in engineering entrepreneurship, always, you know, keeping a bit of my love and passion for entrepreneurship. And after graduating, I went and worked in Wall Street for a few years and then returned to Panama to work with my family. After a few years working directly for the family business, I realized that the business was very structured and my contribution would be much more gradual within the family. So I wanted to do something a bit bigger, a bit different, and help the family expand into different horizons. That led me to explore a new industry that I found to be extremely exciting and growing. So in 2016, I started exploring the cannabis industry. The only place in the world where it was federally legal was in Canada. So my journey led me there, got involved with an early stage cannabis company called Tokyo Smoke. I joined the board and that gave me my firsthand experience into an entrepreneurial journey. Tokyo Smoke ended up getting acquired by a public company. And after that, I started my own business of advising and helping grow early stage companies, helping them list in junior exchanges in Canada, and just being a helpful person in the activities of early stage companies.
Well, that's amazing. So we actually have a little bit of similarities in our background, both coming from families of entrepreneurs, business owners, then going off to college, going the corporate route for a little bit, and then, you know, eventually starting our own businesses. Very exciting journey.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, my family's sort of experience definitely played into my upbringing and my decision to become an entrepreneur. And funny enough, when you're a successful entrepreneur, your business becomes a real corporation and you lose a bit of that, you know, excitement and volatility that startups generally have. So, you know, growing up with an entrepreneurial family and then coming into a corporate environment was, you know, really a bit of a difficult position for me to be in. So that's where I decided to find something that really suited what my family built me up for when I was young. And that's why I decided to become more of an active entrepreneur.
That's fantastic. This is such great background and experience. And one of the things when we talked the other day, you said was you learn business by doing business. And I think you, much like me, raised in that entrepreneurial family that had their own businesses. So you were exposed to it all the time, but it's kind of different whenever you start doing it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, being part of a family that has a wide span of different businesses and a lot of variety, I got the chance to be involved in contract negotiations, in, you know, real estate discussions, in, you know, retail positioning, marketing meetings, all sorts of things. And I found that to be just the best way to understand the business to its core. So when you live it, when you do it yourself, you really get to the bottom of it and you understand the whys of everything. You know, with that, I say my grandfather always says, you need to ask for any question you have, ask why 5 times. And that's the way in which you'll get to the core of your answer. So, you know, to me, that was just very, very helpful. And when I went into college and started getting, you know, call it more tangible skills and working on these engineering classes that were very technical, It was interesting to try and think how I can apply it to the work that I had done before. So, you know, even after doing it and then getting educated, I found having worked in a business was extremely helpful for my development.
I love that. Ask why five times. See, I knew you'd have some good ones. You know, and then you went into college for engineering, but then you went a completely different direction for your first corporate role.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, you learn business by doing it. So I felt that if I studied business, what exactly are you going to learn? And you're going to learn most of what you're going to do when you're getting deeper into the business and getting more involved. So the reason I chose engineering is because I love numbers. I love brain teasers. I love sort of test taking and all of that stuff. And in engineering, I took classes like, you know, electricity, magnetism, stochastic systems, and, you know, really complex subjects that I have never studied before. But I felt that if I took those hard skills into the business world, it would be certainly much easier to understand, buying and selling, margins, term sheets, and, you know, topics that are crucial to business, but you don't necessarily need to spend years studying them. So I felt like an engineering background would certainly help with my entrepreneurial journey and with my business life as well.
Absolutely. So how did you jump from your corporate role in investment banking into entrepreneurship?
Well, it was a difficult decision. It's very hard to do the jump at first. I'd say I got a bit of luck, and I'll explain why. But, you know, obviously you're in your role, you're coming into the office every day, you know what to expect, you see the same people, everyone is sort of in that similar environment. So it's very easy to sort of be around that. But, you know, as my interest for the cannabis industry grew, and I started talking to more people, doing some investments and starting to explore the industry, I started realizing that there's a much broader world and a lot of different things happening that you just don't get access to because everyone you're surrounded with is sort of in that same world. So wanting to find something different and having some exposure in the cannabis business, and then the industry just taking off, and, you know, everyone that I was talking about it would tell me, you're crazy, that's never going to happen. And then it started happening. So people started getting back to me, giving me a bit more attention on the subject, asking me questions. And in a way, in a time where I was very young, I started becoming a bit of a subject matter expert in an industry that few people knew about. So that gave me a bit of a push and a bit more of a desire to start focusing on something that I knew I had a competitive advantage over most people in the world. You know, when you're 26 years old, it's very difficult to be in the top percentile of anything. You know, it takes a lot to be an expert and to grow. And because cannabis was such a new and burgeoning industry, I certainly stood out with, you know, just a few years of experience. So, after that, I had a big exit with my investment. As I mentioned, the company was acquired by Canopy Growth, a public company. It was a multi-million dollar exit that the company had. So at that point, I said, okay, there's really a lot that can happen here. I understand this quite well. I have a really strong background that I learned from investment banking and, you know, doing the hard work, working the long hours, analyzing financial statements, and, you know, just generally understanding a company. And I felt that was a skill set that was very necessary and lacking in the cannabis industry at the time. So all of those factors really influenced me into making that decision. And, you know, I would always say the last moment when you sort of make that jump is always super hard. But I felt I had to take the leap of faith and just try for something different because work was starting to become a little bit monotonous and just the same thing every day. So it was a bit of a search for excitement, a bit of luck and traction in what I was doing. And ultimately was the best decision that I ever made.
That's amazing. That's really exciting to hear. I mean, it is a challenge, right? To make that decision, to take that leap of faith, right?
Very tough, very tough. And you have so many questions and you have so many doubts and, you know, it's really fear of the unknown. Like you just don't know what it will be like. You know, you just don't know where your next paycheck is going to come from. There's just so many different things. And, you know, with that, I'd say a big challenge that I was facing was who to ask advice from. Because, you know, when you're in banking, it's easy to go to someone that's a former banker or one of your managing directors or someone in the business that's gone through what you've been through, that they can help you understand the landscape, understand how to improve. But when I went into the venture world and entrepreneurial world, it was just very difficult to find someone that had the experience, that had the trajectory, just understood it. And, you know, you just need to get comfortable with knowing that no one has really done that. It's a new world. It's new things that are happening. You can find parallels. And I would say finding a mentor and talking to other entrepreneurs definitely helps a lot. But I would certainly say it's a different sort of angle where you have to understand it will be something different. You just need to learn to pick up the important points and how you can use those tips and those tactics to improve your specific journey.
That's so good, because that acclimation period, when you've made that leap, when you've become an entrepreneur, that's the tough one, right? It's exciting at first when you get there and you're like, this is amazing. And as we talked about, like, I can set my own hours and do my own thing. Then you realize, wow, this is a whole new world. I don't know all the people here. I'm living in a new land, entrepreneur land, very different from that corporate land.
Completely, completely. And, you know, I think we all know that the entrepreneurial world is generally more volatile, but I would say the first few months are particularly more volatile, because at first you start feeling this freedom, like I can do whatever I want. I have so much time in my hands. Then you sort of realize, like, maybe you should start focusing a little. There's no one telling you what to do. So you start maybe freaking out a little bit, like, how am I going to pay the bills? How are things going to happen? Then, you know, the first month ends, you know, there's no money coming into your bank account. You're like, okay, now I really need to get serious. So the first few months are just, you know, this up and down journey. I just need to start getting used to and acclimated to. And ultimately, this ups and downs, you just get used to it. You learn to, you know, roll with the punches and just go with it. But at first, when you're used to the stability or perceived stability of a real job, it's something that's very shocking and different, that it's unexpected, I would say.
Absolutely. So after your exit, because congratulations on that, that's an amazing exit. What did you do next?
So after I exited, I had a little bit of money in my pocket that I could, you know, be a bit more chill and relaxed and not have to expect the next paycheck. So that gave me a bit of breathing room. I sort of took a step back and said, okay, I'm just going to become a cannabis mogul. There's very few people that are doing it. There's very few businessmen that are in this world. If I jump in early and do it, it's going to be a great experience. So I left my job at the bank, started just talking to companies. My original idea was to start building like a venture fund. It was very difficult at the time. The banking legislations and restrictions on investing in cannabis were extremely strict and difficult. So, you know, without having experience building a fund, that just became a challenge. So what I said is, you know, I want to advise companies. I want to become a director. I want to join their companies. I want to help them with strategy, help them with thinking how to position themselves, and, you know, just apply the experience that I picked up all those years as a kid and a teenager working for the family, and then in an engineering degree, and then in Wall Street, and then back with the family in the bank. So just wanted to help entrepreneurs that maybe don't have that much trajectory in the business world sort of gear their cannabis business in that direction. So, you know, I was actually, you know, doing that for maybe 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, another turn in my entrepreneurial journey happened where, you know, the industry completely went into a halt. There was way overspent money and overbuilding in the industry. So the bubble burst and, you know, the industry went into pretty much consolidation. Companies started going bankrupt. And I was sitting there and I'm like, okay, I thought I was going to become a cannabis mogul, but this doesn't seem like it's going to be happening. The industry is taking a step back. And, you know, that was a great lesson in that everything is cyclical. And, you know, industries, any industry will be in favor and then out of favor and then back in favor, sort of moving like a pendulum. And, you know, that was a very steep increase. So it had a very drastic decline. So, you know, after that, I had to sort of step back and you know, I would say, just as I was happy with that win I had with Tokyo Smoke and having that exit, I had a lot of failures and a lot of opportunities to really learn. And, you know, I always say when you make a good business and you make money, great, you made money, but it's hard to pick up experiences because you can't tell exactly what the recipe for success was. However, when you have a failure and a company goes the wrong way, you can very easily tell, okay, it was this and this and this that really made the company go in the wrong direction. And you can only use that to improve in the future and make your future ventures better. So, you know, a failure is only a failure if you don't learn from it. But it's really important to have some of those because they complement your learning. And ultimately, as you grow professionally and you keep growing your entrepreneurial venture and journey, you can use those experiences to optimize your future projects. And that ultimately will save you way more money, risk, and you know, just pain in the future if you learn those experiences early in the game.
That's such a good point, because I think, especially today, people think that you're overnight success, right? They see the Instagram lifestyle. And I know so many people who are starting out, they look at these other people who are entrepreneurs doing it themselves. And it looks like you only see the stage production. You don't see all the hard work that goes on and all of the fails that got them to that point. So that's such a good point, Ray. And are there any fails that you want to mention?
Well, just to your point, you know, absolutely. Everyone sort of thinks it's an overnight success, but you know, I would say it's not only the time you spend building that business and getting to that success, but also all the time before that you spend learning about the things that prepared you for that, all the previous failures, and you know, all of those experiences are really what create the value you can provide to these businesses to you know, help them grow and excel. You know, I'm happy to share my failures. If I shared, you know, all of them, we wouldn't have enough time in the podcast, but you know, I can certainly share one that, you know, was particularly helpful. You know, I was involved in this company after the Tokyo Smoke exit. I said, oh, I'm a genius. I know how things work. I'm just going to replicate this model over a few other companies and it's going to be successful. And, you know, my model in the early stages was, you know, just find a great founder and find someone that, you know, knows how to run the business, knows the space, is a humble person. And, you know, I was in a bit of a rush because I had patience on the first one, but afterwards it's like, you know, the world is going crazy about cannabis. I wanted to, you know, move quickly. So my due diligence process was not as thorough, and, you know, that was a mistake. I rushed the deal and got involved with this company in the cannabis space that was involved in preparing industry specific conferences. So, you know, just for a bit more context on that, it was very difficult to connect with people that were involved in cannabis for many reasons. People didn't want to say they were involved. There was stigma associated, you know, so many just bad things where people were hiding that they were in the cannabis space. So it was very difficult to find entrepreneurs and business people in this space. So this conference was extremely successful in the early days in creating an open forum for people to connect with each other, to talk about their experiences. And these conferences were fascinating. You would go to these events and you'd see lawyers and businessmen and doctors and researchers and journalists. And everyone was just there because they understood the potential. So I invested into that company. I joined the board. I attracted some investors into the company. And as the industry matured, people were already building those connections. People were more open about just being in cannabis. So the need for the conferences and the value they provided just became way less obvious and way less apparent. So, you know, that made it more difficult. We had to lower prices for the conferences. And we were very, very wide across the world. We were doing events in Panama, Hong Kong, in Australia, in South Africa. And people would come and would love them. But it was hard to justify an ROI when people were already sort of having those connections, doing businesses on the side, and just went there for, you know, more of a fun experience, maybe meet a few more people. And as time went by, this just became more and more redundant. So it was a model that was very fun, and I felt that like there was value. But ultimately, as the industry matured, I didn't have the foresight to sort of know that, okay, people are going to know each other from outside the conferences. Why would I need to create a whole event and a whole production and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to put something where, you know, they can just talk through LinkedIn, through Zoom. And, you know, I would say in that one, we also got a bit unlucky because our big, big event, the landmark 5-year event, was supposed to be March 29th, 2020 in Israel. And obviously that was right when the pandemic struck. We didn't even get the deposit back from the hotel. And that just complicated the financial situation for the company and, you know, an environment that was already in, you know, diminished sort of value from the business. So we had a very hard time there, a little bit of bad luck, and ultimately a lot of lessons that I could have, you know, really taken. If I had those lessons before, maybe I could have found a way to pivot the business or to find another way to make it successful. But I would say that was a very notable failure that I had. I gathered a lot of lessons. It made me a better person. It was extremely painful at the time, but looking back, you get over it and just try to pick, the silver lining out of it and how you can really improve and grow from those experiences.
Yeah, definitely. That's tough. And when obviously 2020 had a major impact, but market conditions change too. And we talked about that a little bit, how things change. And so does the business that you think you're getting into when you first get started. I'd like to kind of fast forward to today. So what are you doing today and what does it look like? How is it the same or different from what you were doing early on?
Sure. So after, like I said, the cannabis boom ended and it was very hard to build businesses in that space, I took a step back. And really what I appreciated most about my experiences was getting exposed to the Canadian capital markets. And for those of you who are not familiar with the Canadian markets, they're very different than the usual New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ, where companies usually go and exit their investments. These exchanges are more growth-focused and growth-oriented exchanges. So think about it as public venture capital. So, instead of going to a VC and asking them for capital and having them take a few board seats and have a lot of controls over the business, what you do is you do a public offering in a Canadian exchange. You raise funds. I mean, companies can be as small as, $3 million market cap. So extremely small companies that can be publicly traded. They can raise $500,000, $1 million, or even 10 or 50 million. The number is really, really wide and varies a lot, but it gives you exposure to a wide variety of retail investors that are now shareholders in your company. And what that gives you is that democratizes the capital around your business, where you have a very wide and diverse cap table, and that people are really going to be reacting to what you announce in the market, what you disclose, what trends are happening in that industry. So if you really time the market the right way, you can get a nice windfall and you can get a nice tail, you can get nice tailwinds into your business and really capitalize on some exciting growth opportunities. So I work, I wouldn't say exclusively, but my main focus is in the Canadian capital markets. And I basically do three things geared towards the Canadian markets. So the first one is venture building, where I try to build companies in exciting industries that I think will be, hot and trending in the next 6, 12, 18 months. I try to find a team that can operate the business. I join usually as a director, help them raise capital, build a strategy, and then help them do a listing in a Canadian exchange and, get a bit of liquidity, get some more market visibility, and then spur further growth from that listing. The second vertical, I would say, is strategic advisory, where it's very similar to venture building, but I don't necessarily come up with the ideas. So I find companies that are as early as possible. If it's pre-incorporation, that's even better, but in earlier stages is still pretty good. I find a way to get involved in their cap table, either as an advisor or a director, and then just help them build a strategy and open their minds into the possibilities that the Canadian exchanges can provide, or how to get prepared for that, or alternative ways of funding the company. And then the third vertical, and this is specifically geared towards Canadian markets, is I call go public structuring. So essentially building shell companies or, sort of like SPACs, but the smaller type of vehicle in Canada is called a capital pool company or CPC. And these vehicles are very easy, very little cash required, and you use them to take a company public fairly quickly. It's also a vehicle that has significant restrictions on the shareholder selling after the deal is done. So that helps you not have that much downward pressure when the stock goes public. So, specifically I'm sector agnostic. So now that I saw that industries have their ups and downs, I don't want to pigeonhole myself into one specific sector, because when that sector is not doing well, it's very difficult to do business. So in terms of sectors, I'm working with companies in the mining space, in the renewable energy space, in the esports space, plant-based foods, gig economy, psychedelics, also a little bit of cannabis, but just really open to any opportunities that come my way, understanding that the world can change at any point and that you should be prepared, diversified, and exposed to as many different businesses as possible. And then I try to really leverage my previous experiences, including the experiences I got from my failures, to provide value to entrepreneurs and help them achieve their goal, grow their companies, list them, raise capital, whatever they need in that journey. I found that running a business is fairly similar business across business. You're just changing the product or service and maybe the customer, but ultimately the business practices are fairly similar. So I found that I can recycle the experiences that I've had and then, you know, really take advantage of all those additional lessons that every time optimize my experience and my knowledge base to really help entrepreneurs that have the specific expertise in their sector, just complement them with the business knowledge and business acumen to take the company to greater heights.
That's incredible. I mean, taking those lessons learned, now bringing them to new businesses, new entrepreneurs, helping them to grow their business. I'm sure that's very satisfying too.
It's amazing. I would say, you know, when you sort of come up with an idea from scratch, it's just a dream. You talk about it, you start putting it on paper, you make a presentation, then you convince some investors to believe in your dream and put in some hard dollars. Then you bring in entrepreneurs and there's all the ups and downs and, you know, mistakes and issues. But then ultimately you're seeing this company as a real business, a listed company. It's trading on an exchange. There's real people caring about it and, you know, praising the company or criticizing it for what it's doing. But it's just really amazing to go from, you know, just an idea or a dream to just really seeing something concrete that's real, that has a life of its own, where, you know, I can really escape or, you know, just, you know, take a step down and bring smarter people than me to run the business. And it's a real going concern. It's not going anywhere. It will still keep growing and thriving and advancing. And as long as you put the right people there, the company will still be there. But I would say that's the most rewarding part of my business. Just coming up with a dream and an idea, and then having the chance to a few years later, see it be something real.
I can feel your enthusiasm for the work you do and that you love it. Being an entrepreneur though, also, what do you love about being an entrepreneur?
Well, what I love really is that I get to do what I love most of the time. I think that is certainly a privilege. And, you know, of course there are things that you have to do that are not as fun, but ultimately you're gearing your life around what you love. And, you know, when people ask me this, I always say that since I left my formal business or the corporate world, I see myself as a company and I run myself as a company. So the financial aspect, which is what most people consider the work side, is of course very important, but I also really enjoy spending time with my family and my grandparents, and I learn a lot from them. So if on a Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. I want to go and have breakfast with my grandfather, I can go and do it and I can move my schedule around. And I wouldn't say I'm lazy or a slacker. You know, I'd probably work super late and make up for that time, but I get to really rearrange my life. I would also say, you know, health and fitness is extremely important to me. So I really work on putting that into my schedule and fitting it, or, you know, doctor appointment, whether preventive or, you know, whatever it is. I really get to think of myself as the company and think of how I can add value to my company or myself, and how I can increase my well-being, increase my social relations, my family relations, my spirituality, my mindfulness, and obviously my financial well-being as well. But it's a very different angle than when you see it from the corporate lens, where, you know, you're pretty much a cog in a big system where, of course, you're extremely important, but you're really not calling the shots, and you have to really follow course to make sure that the business goes in the right direction. And when the business is the main focus, then it's really hard to really focus on yourself. And that's sometimes where maybe there is a disconnect. So I would say that's really what I love most about being an entrepreneur. And of course, there are the challenges, but having that flexibility, that freedom, and just that, you know, financial freedom and just freedom of time and just owning your time and arranging yourself as best as you can, I think is amazing.
I don't think anyone would consider you lazy, Ray. You do a lot of work and you have so much energy. And I love that you look at yourself as a business too, in a positive way, right? I think that taking that holistic view and knowing what your priorities are, like your family, like you said, you can go on a 9 o'clock in the morning and go have breakfast with your grandfather. I mean, that's what life's all about, right? Having these experiences and these moments. And business is important, but when you have the flexibility and the freedom to do things on your terms, it's really a game changer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say, you know, even though I work on my own schedule, I've probably worked harder than ever before, but it's also really easy to get motivated and get driven to work hard because it's exactly what I want to be doing. And maybe the process is not as fun, but if you just think of the outcome and, you know, what you can be building and how many people you can be helping or satisfying services or solving problems, then, you know, it justifies anything that you're doing at the time. It makes it fun because you're looking at that end goal. You know, I would also say, and, you know, back to your previous question, I love that I choose who I work with. You know, I really have the luxury of surrounding myself with people that are way smarter than I am. And I get to learn from them. I get to, you know, have them add value to my businesses. Whereas in the corporate world, you pretty much have to work with whoever was there before, whoever you're assigned. But in the entrepreneurial world, you get to choose who your clients are, who you do business with, who your partners are. And I think that's a great perk because you learn, you grow in terms of experiences. And I think that really is one of the things that I enjoy the most of being an entrepreneur and managing my own time.
That's amazing. I agree. I share the same view on that. I love having the opportunity to work with who I want to work with and how I want to work with them. And I think one of the challenges, a lot of people when they're in corporate and they're thinking about starting a business or they've just made that leap over, like we were talking about how you have to start figuring things out, seeing that end goal is motivating. I think so many people get stuck in the weeds of all the operations and all the things that they have to do, and taking, you know, kind of taking a different view of it makes a huge difference. I also think that a lot of people who are thinking about making that transition focus so much on the risk involved in being an entrepreneur. Have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to really visualize it at first because you have no idea what you're going into. You don't know what the process is. You know, you're sort of like stumbling and taking one step after the next and just hoping that you're walking in the right direction. But, you know, one day you may wake up and realize, oops, that was not the right direction. Maybe I should go the other way. And then you start moving in that direction and ultimately you'll get to the promised land. It will happen if you keep working hard. You know, regarding the risks, I mean, I think it's extremely important to consider the risks and to, you know, just judge by your specific position, you know, whether financial or you know, whatever other consideration there is, it's important to be aware of the risks. You know, what I would say is, you know, it's being an entrepreneur is something that has a lot of ambiguity and uncertainty. And the entrepreneur needs to understand that and needs to sort of live in that world and just be comfortable with it. And it's hard to be comfortable with it, but ultimately you start getting used to it. You start making it part of your life. But, you know, when it comes to risks, I think they cannot be ignored. You know, you need to figure out a way to quantify those risks, whether, you know, write them down, ask other people. Something I like to do is, you know, I think of what the worst case scenario is, and then I start building up from that. And that gives me a bit of tranquility because I think, okay, this is the worst that can happen. Nothing worse than that can happen. And that's pretty bad, but it's not the end of the world. And then, oh, if I do this and secure that, then the outcome is not that bad, it's a bit better. And then, oh, what if I do that? And you slowly start sort of raising the floor on what your risks are. And that helps me sort of get through that ambiguity and uncertainty. But, you know, I think the risks are going to be there, whether we like them or not. I think the risks are there in the corporate world as well, maybe a bit less perceived or a bit less in the surface. But I think it's extremely important to be mindful of them, to be quantifying them, to be mitigating them, because risks are always going to be there. But the higher the risk, the higher the reward. So, you know, this higher risk environment definitely yields, you know, higher upside on entrepreneurs for sure.
Absolutely. No, very well said. So with that, I mean, you've given us so much good advice here and so many things to think about. Is there anything closing, any words of wisdom or amazement to share with my audience?
So the advice or wisdom that I'd share is that you need to be ready to work harder than ever before. You're going to be your own boss. You're going to make your own decisions. No one's going to be telling you what to do. So it's up to you to make sure you succeed. But working hard is not necessarily something painful. That could end up being the most meaningful thing you do because step by step, you're going to be seeing progress. You're going to be seeing growth. And you're really going to be surrounded by people that you chose to be there. So that gives you just more passion for what you do and makes that work amazing. I would also say find yourself a good mentor. That's extremely important. There are times where you're so in the midst of things that it's very hard to take a high level look at things. And having someone that's a smart and centered person that is sort of at arm's length or one step removed from the actual issues and the actual problems can help you get a very clear and fresh perspective on the issues that you're going through. And that way you can really just you know, trust that that person's judgment is more unbiased than you being sort of in the trenches. So it's, I think it's extremely important to have that grounding person that will help you just really understand your issues, understand your opportunities, and, you know, just realize that it's usually not as bad as you think, but it's also usually not as good as you think.
Now, that's really well said. Ray, thank you so much for being here today. How can my listeners get in touch with you? How can they find you?
Sure. No, thank you, Nicole. I'm so pleased to be here. So to find me, the best way would probably be through LinkedIn. You can find me Raymond D. Harari. Send me a message. I'm pretty up there and responding quickly. You can also go through my website, canaliscapital.com. And there's a contact page, my email's there, my WhatsApp's there, you can fill a form and I'll get an email. But, you know, I'm always happy to talk to entrepreneurs, always happy to help people. You know, my business is so broad that anything is really an opportunity. And if I can help someone go in their entrepreneurial journey, I'd be thrilled to. And maybe it's a business opportunity for me as well in the future. So, you know, anything is game, and always happy to share my experiences, share my failures as well, like I did today a little bit. And just be helpful to anyone that wants it.
Ray, thank you so much. It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I am excited for your business and what you do. I know you're helping so many people and you're having a blast doing it. That to me is one of the most exciting things about the Corporate Expat Experience. So thank you again. And thank you everyone for listening today. Until the next time, bye for now. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support this podcast, please hit subscribe, leave a rating and review, share it with others, or post about it on social media. For show notes, links, to connect with guests and more, visit us at corporate-expat.com. And be sure to catch the next episode with more insights and inspiration to support your corporate expat experience. Bye for now.